Hello and welcome to the Hash Rugby Chat, episode 50-something or other. Yes, not 50-something, 90-something or other. Jeez, we've done lots of these sort of things. Anyway, lots and lots of shows. And this week we are talking about the Super Rugby end of season. We are going to be looking at the Sharks, the Chiefs, Highlanders, Lions and Stormers. Because last week we did the Rebels, Blues, Waratahs, Reds and Sunwolves. And next week we'll do the top five once they've finished their season, because obviously the Crusaders and the Jaguars are still ongoing. Hi, I'm Paul, the guy behind Driving Mall, your best place for every predictions and opinion. And joining me this week, just to be nice and confusing, I have Steve and Stephen. How are you doing, sirs?
Well, I'll start. Yeah, always a privilege and a pleasure to be on the TDM, and also great to have two Steves on this evening, aka Cornflakes. So I think we're in for a pretty good show this evening.
Yeah, good way to start off. It'd be nice and confusing, isn't it? Yes, good to be back. I'm ready to pick on some more unwilling and poor little Super Rugby sides after last week.
Poor little Super Rugby sides. Oh, diddums. So we should first off, before we get there though, do a quick little news roundup. The All Blacks announced their squad about approximately an hour ago. We will go into that in depth tomorrow night on the All Blacks edition, so don't forget to join us at 8 p.m. for that. Stephen, Mr. Harris, you'll be happy that one of the things we've been discussing has been the All Blacks selectors. Can they change their mind? And it looks like they can, because they picked Mr. Weber there. So that's got to be a good sign.
Oh yeah, definitely a mental shift. Not only just with Brad Weber, but we also spoke about the form during the season of Liam Cotman, and there's a obviously they've overlooked Nathan Harris, no relation, I've got to say. Definitely capable of changing their mind, and they made a couple of other harsh calls there as well. Not so much harsh, but I think calls that we knew were coming, the likes of Waisaki Noholo not making the 41.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll go into that in detail tomorrow night. We'll also talk about the All Blacks jersey that's been officially announced now. I know we mentioned it last week on the All Blacks edition, but we can talk about it properly next this week now. We've seen it in the full. And Steve, there was some other news you said that was massively important this week.
Oh yeah, I almost forgot what you said then. Yes, of course, it will be the grand final of Super Rugby this weekend, but the best part about it will be that there's no Angus Cardner. So that's great. It will be Arco Piper that is in control. So I'm really happy that we've gone the whole final series without Angus Cardner involved. So big smile for me, big thumbs up there for Sanzar. Not often I give Sanzar a thumbs up. So take this one and put it away in the back pocket.
not a fan, Steve, eh? I take by that.
Of Sanzar or Angus Cardner?
No, of Angus Cardner.
Definitely not.
Well, for those of you that listen to the All Over podcast, they're not big fans of Jaco Piper either, and they have this funny little bit where they go, "Mrs. Piper, hands off, Mrs. Piper. No hands in the rack, Mrs. Piper. Don't enter from the side, Mrs. Piper." And they say, "Yeah, that's Jaco Piper's bedroom talk." So there we go.
Oh no. Oh dear, to quote you, Paul.
As I say, I've stolen that one off the All Over podcast, so go and check them out. Down Exeter Way, where I used to go to university, so they're a good crowd. Any other sort of rugby news before we get on to sort of having a quick look at the games and then have a look at the regular season?
No.
Oh, Super Rugby final. That's all the news we've got to talk about. Big dance. It's all happening.
It is all happening. One thing that Stephen and I reviewed the games in detail last night, so go back and you can go back and look at that. But I thought I'd go away and have a look at some stats. And for my Mickey Mouse moment of the week, I've got the Brumbies line out. It was operating its seventh best in the regular season up until that point, 90% success rate, 81 at the weekend. That was pretty poor. Any other Mickey Mouse moments of the weekend, boys? I've sort of sprung that on you.
Probably for me, probably from the same game, probably you'd have to say the first try that the Hagawares scored just to give them that immediate momentum. Two guys going for the ball, absolutely colliding with each other. Ball sits up and the Hagawares score the very first try. And that just seemed to give the home team a whole lot of momentum. To be honest, there weren't too. I didn't see too many Mickey Mouse moments from the Hurricanes Crusaders game. Although
we had the exact same thing, didn't we? We had Marshall, we had TJ, we had someone else, all sort of semi going for the ball.
That's a point. That's a point. Although some Hurricane supporters could be saying it was a very Mickey Mouse decision right at the end of the game there. Take your pick.
Did you stole my point there? That's the one I was going to go for. I thought it could be good or bad, no matter what way you look at it. But probably a hand from Mr. Whitelock would probably be the big one that a lot of teams or people will be looking at, depending on what side of the fence they sit on as to how they viewed that one. Sam.
What it was smart. That's what it was. He got away with it.
If you're on a red jersey side, yeah. I don't think they'll call that on the yellow side.
Oh dear.
Pretty angry times.
Jax puts in the chat that Dave Rennie to the Waratahs. I didn't know. Is that actual news? Has that come out and been announced, or is that just a rumour at the moment?
No, that is actually news. That story actually broke yesterday. I think it was on Stuff. But apparently both the Waratahs and the Wallabies are chasing Rennie.
A bidding war between the two.
A lot will depend after a certain court case. may not be able to afford him.
Well, there is that, yes. okay, so that one's not rumour. That's rumour still at the moment, then. That's not actually news. It's not actually official yet, then, on that one. We'll see him. Hopefully, we'll see him over there. That's one less New Zealand interest in the European Champions Cup, but yes, that's something that's done on the sly, but on the quiet. So never mind. Rumours there, just teasers. So let's get on to it then. The first team we're going to talk about, bottoms up. We'll start off with the Stormers. Stephen, do you want to have a quick give us an overview as to don't give us your grade yet. Just give us an idea as to what you think of how their season went.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I actually thought, because they got their sort of tour out of the way, their tour to New Zealand or Australasia out of the way relatively early, and they showed signs that they could be a really good side. I remember, I think there was a game against the Hurricanes where they gave them a real hurry up in the forwards, and I actually thought they were looking really good. In fact, I actually made the prediction they'd make the finals, if you recall, if you view back through your YouTube clips. I thought with their run home that they had, that they would be a bit of a chance. You know, they were actually playing some pretty decent code, but they seemed to get back to South Africa and just absolutely falter when they actually arrived home. I actually thought they were well placed to have a crack at the finals, but it wasn't to be.
No, it wasn't. They came bottom of the Africa Conference, 7 wins, 1 draw, and 8 losses. And also, tries for, 34 tries, the same as the Sunwolves, the lowest in the competition. Not a great not a great attacking threat from them in this season. Steve, your thoughts on the Stormers?
I think they were a bit of a victim of a very, very, very tight South African conference, weren't they, as well, where they looked like they were doing all right, but one poor game or a little bit of a bad run can make you go from right up there competing for the top spots to completely out of it at the bottom. So they suffered a bit from that. Yeah, they finished the greatest. I mean, you can probably give them a little bit of credit because they were in the reckoning, in the running of things for pretty much all season and right till the very end. I mean, they're only a couple of points off finishing in third spot with the Sharks. So it could have been all been a lot different if they maybe won one more game or got one more good result. They could have found themselves in those playoffs, and that really would have been their benchmark, as most teams in their similar position would have been. So it definitely could have been better, but I don't think it was an ultimate and huge failure for them.
I mean, their attack was just... 12th ranked in carries, 14th ranked on meters made. So even when they did carry, they didn't carry that far. 15th ranked on clean breaks. So last for clean breaks in the tournament. Only the Brumbies were fourth. 14th, sorry. But seventh for defenders beaten, which shows that they were a very blunt instrument, just bashing it up.
Very much so. When you consider they had a lock playing in a number seven jersey, Steph Tatoi, it probably tells you what sort of game plan they're actually looking at. I actually did think Kulesi, the captain, at times was very good for them. And then they lost him for a couple of games to injury. And then they looked like they hit a bit of a purple patch. I think it was round about round 14 where they actually drew with the Crusaders. And you've got to say, a little bit fortunately in that particular game, but for a TMO calling a forward pass against, who was it? Enortu, I think it was Enortu Sivirese, who put the kick ahead and scored in the corner. And they called it back. But that was a pretty creditable draw to get to 19-all. And then the following week, they played the Highlanders at home and beat them 34-20. So they were actually well-placed. But, you know, when you look at their back three of Williams, Sinatla, the Sevens player, and Lates, the flying winger, they're not too bad. But I just suspect where a lot of their issues were in and around first five and second five. They tried a couple of different players, and Delonde, who's who, if you think back a few years ago when he played for the Springboks, we thought he'd be the next best thing, but I think he made his debut as a winger. But I think at second five, I don't think he's that great a distributor, guys.
No, he's not, is he? He's one of those players who can go through a game without passing the ball once. It's kind of, yep, if he's there at second receiver, he's going to be bashing it up. And then the next play might go wide, which means that the outside defenders can actually switch off and have a bit of relax. And it does give you that, it means you do take off that pressure off the defenders. You need a more all-round game than that. He has improved. I mean, he's not quite as bad as he used to be, where he literally never passed the ball. I mean, I can remember looking at some stats prior to the Rugby World Cup in 2015. And yes, you can see that there were games literally where he never passed the ball, which just keeps them far too narrow. And defensively, they were much better. 85% tackling over the season, sixth ranking. Which is good. They were, and the discipline was pretty good. But there's just probably because, as you say, mixing around players, not really knowing who their best side was. They had a good lineup more, but it ended up looking like that's all they had, and they just amongst them. I think it was the Blues game where you could actually see they came out and they played a set pattern, which was. They would pass it twice, someone bash it up. The next play, the ball went all the way across the other side of the pitch, and they did that four times on the trot. And you could see the ball go either way. Like, that is so. There was no playing the players in front of you. It was literally playing paint by numbers attack. And you at this kind of level, you can't get away with that. So Stephen. Steve, do you want to lead us off with your grade?
Right, my grade. What did I give them? The Stormers. I gave them a tasty C. I think it's a bit of a mark that would be a lot better if they got that one more victory that they're looking for. But I think overall for the Stormers, they can definitely build on what they've done. I think they've got a few guys that they'll probably look to develop on in the next season as well. I mean, you talked about key guys in that pack, but I think. In the backs, Herschel Jankies was a guy that definitely was a big standout for them this year. I think he's been named their preliminary Springbok side as well that they're kind of playing with at the moment. So he's been a big jump up for them. But it's plenty of work on, but I definitely feel that they exceeded my expectation, which wasn't too good of them. And I'm a pretty big Stormers fan from South Africa and as a South African side, but as the other South African sides, they were too inconsistent throughout, and there was a conference thing wide, not just the one team. But yeah, definitely a good base and exceeded my expectations. That's why I'm giving them a C, because I thought they were going to be worse. And especially touring. Last year, they were woeful. I remember, I think it was against the Crusaders, was it, that they just, or the Hurricanes might have been, every single time they had the ball, they just cross-field kicked. and they just stayed narrow, and they stayed narrow, and they just didn't get it, and they just kicked across field, and they scored a plethora of tries. This year, they've adapted, they've learned, they've been a lot better. So hopefully, it's an upward trend for the Stormers in the future. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Stephen, I'll try and agree with you. Steve, he's also on a C. Stephen, you've been slightly more harsh, haven't you?
Yeah, a little bit more harsh from my point of view. I actually gave them a D, and that's probably more disappointment from mine because I actually thought they put themselves in a good situation to actually run home. So they really, in my opinion, probably had the ability to maybe pick up a C or a C plus, or even make the eights. I mean to say. But I tell you what, their first two results pretty much sums up their season. They started with a home game, 33-28 to the Bulls. Then they played the same team the following week and got torn a new one by 40 points to 3. And then they played the Lions, got a 2-point win. And then they played the Sharks away and a 5-point win. And that just seemed to be their theme. Every team that South African conference team that they played, it got turned around and they lost to. Same with the Hangawaris as well. When they sort of came over towards New Zealand, they played the Hurricanes first. I thought they were very unlucky in that game, 34-28. Then they were
a line out more away from winning that.
Yeah, exactly. And they did well to hold the Blues. The Blues had to work hard to beat them 24-9. And then of course, on the back of that, a couple of good performances in New Zealand, they go across and get beaten by the lowly Reds 24-12. And then they beat the Rebels, and then they lose to the Brumbies. And I thought that was actually a good performance against the Brumbies to go to Canberra and lose by 2 points. And then, yeah, it was up and down. I would love to give them a C, but I think, for me, they sit at a D. If they can keep a lot of the core of those guys, I think it's a good thing. But I think they have to really think about what style of rugby that they want to play, because I think they're a little bit caught in that old South Africa type mould of play, line out, drive, maul, etc., etc. But man, when you've got a couple of Ferraris sitting in the garage, for crying out loud,
you've got to use
take them for a spin.
Yeah, hey, Simon and Crazy NZ both agree with you in the live chat. I've been harsher. I've gone for an F. Sorry, if you finish bottom of the conference, that's a fail for me. And so, they finished bottom of their conference, and therefore I've given them an F, which is the total opposite to what Michael Pullman's given them. Michael's given them an A. So I need to chat to him tomorrow night. We'll ask him on the All Blacks edition very quickly as to what he was thinking there.
I want to know what Michael sips in their cup. Michael, what are you sipping, mate?
So we're going to have to go on that one. I'll take the Lions, because that then leaves Steve with the Highlanders, which is his home team, which I think will be nice. So the Lions, they came into this one as having made the last two finals. So you've got to say that they were having been the best team in South Africa by a country mile for the past couple of seasons. We were looking at thinking that, yeah, can they kind of continue that? And they really couldn't. They've lost too many players, particularly to Gloucester, but in general, and that really, really hurt them this season. Still not convinced by their head coach that replaced Ackerman as to whether he can. It's more the charisma side of things rather than the skills. He's been part of that setup for a long time now. He knows how they work and has all the technical skills, but I'm not sure he has the charisma to lift these guys up. And I think that a couple of injuries. And the Lions were in trouble. They've got some great players still in Quagga Smith, Whiteley, etc. But they can't do it on their own. They need a few more around them, and they become a bit inexperienced. So I think they're into rebuilding phase now, really, for them. And it's a shame to see them drop down and not be the force that they were. Because they were playing some nice rugby over the last couple of years. Steve, your thoughts on the Lions?
Yeah, it's hard to give them anything positive, isn't it? After the team that they've been and the team that you probably expect them to be as well. And like you say, they lost a lot of guys. But they've still got a really, really good side to put together there. I mean, the key performances they had out of guys, you go through that team. I mean, you can name them all over. The Malcolm Marks, the Quagga Smiths, the Whiteleys, who was in and out a bit of the side. They've still got, you know, Yankees there. They've still got Mapu. Guys that have done it before, like the Vorsters and the Combrinks, Skozans, Kutsias. You know, you can name all these guys. They've got a backline to really dream about. They just didn't really have that form. I mean, Lionel Mapu took a long time to get going during the season. He did show a bit of that form that we're used to seeing from him. And that express outside pace with guys like Deonti, who are just phenomenal and can break a game open by himself. Just didn't see enough of him getting on that front foot. And, I mean, it's hard to blame the pack. It's a very good pack as well. They just don't seem to cohesively work as a unit as consistently as they did last year or the year before and things like that. So, for me, playoffs is a real marker for these sort of teams, is their performances, whether positive or negative. For a team like Lions, have been so good for a number of seasons now to not make that pivotal difference is big for me. So it's all disappointing for the Lions for me. Great team, great players, just not up to expectation for mine. And they, I think, have a lot to work on in future seasons as well. And it's hard to really see how they're going to improve too much with when they're already quite good as a team. So yeah, maybe like say, is it the coaching not getting them the best out of these players like they were in previous seasons as well? So we'll see what happens in their future, but definitely a lot to be desired, I think, from my perspective on the Lions.
So before we go to Stephen, I'll just throw out the some of their stats. They rank second in number of carries, fourth for meters made, and third for clean breaks, and fourth for defenders beaten. So on the attacking side of things, you would say that looks those stats look pretty good. Defensively, though, 14th for the number of tackles. Now, if you're carrying it a lot, you don't expect to have to make that many. But 11th for missed tackles and 12th for tackle percentage. Defensively, they weren't at the races this time. Even if they did manage to stay pretty clean on the old discipline side of things. But yeah, attackingly looking good. Defensively, yeah, hulls all over the place. Which we saw against the Sharks, I think, in particular. But Stephen, is that how you saw things?
Yeah, pretty much. You could arguably say their best performance of the season was in round 10, 23-17 victory over the Chiefs. If you recall, when some really weird things happened before the game, I think they named their team very, very late, and they'd even changed a couple of players when the team actually ran out. And I thought that was quite a gutsy performance, where they pretty much dominated that game, if I recall, for a good 60-65 minutes before the Chiefs came storming back in the last 15 minutes. Arguably their best performance. And funnily enough, I think that was maybe around 10 or 12, but round 9, their poorest performance was a home game against the Sharks. Got absolutely torn in. 42 points to 5 is a pretty unacceptable home performance, fellas. Disappointing. And I, you know, when you know, Steve mentioned some of their backs before, Kutsia, or, you know, he's a Springbok fullback. You've got Yanchez who's there, first five, second five. Mapu, who's played for the Springbokers. Deonti, who's played for the Springboks. So once again, they got quality. But I got to say, the biggest disappointment for me in the Lions this year was Malcolm Marks, guys. He's so highly ranked. You know, sometimes you saw snapshots of how good this fella can be, but I reckon he was pretty much down on form where he was years previous, guys.
Yeah, and I'm not sure you could. It feels like you can say that about a lot of players, that they started slowly and then sort of built up. I've not got the line-out stats, but I seem to think that he kind of also lost his way with his as well.
He's not the Lone Ranger there when it comes to cricket.
put the boost rank. What was the grade?
Well,
no, Steve, not. I'm gonna.
My rank is so pleasing, I guess, for Lions fans, won't it be? I've given them a big failure of an F. For mine, not good enough, I guess, to not make playoffs, like I talked about before. That's a benchmark. A team that's been up there for so long, I just expected better, and I really did think that this team was going to, I know, not be as good as they were in the last 2 years. That was obvious. They've lost so much, but I just, yeah, it's just tough to see them not do anywhere near the capacity that this team should be competing at. Like Stephen says, so many guys, Springboks back line pretty much. And where they lost, I think it have to be put down to the type five. When you look at that team, they really struggled in the second row. Stephen Levis probably wasn't up to his best, or up to, you know, top class sort of standard. And Marvin Aurea, another one. Those guys played minutes for them and took a lot of that strain of their second row that just, I don't think, was up to the task ultimately. And yeah, Marks certainly wasn't his performance that we've seen him in the past. And the guys on either side of him probably didn't help to what he's probably used to in the last couple of years as well. So that was the downer for me. But I just, yeah, overall, my expectation was that they would still compete. They'd still be around in finals time. You know, maybe not getting a top spot in South Africa, but still getting two or three and sniping into those bottom spots and still making their presence felt in the competition. That was far from it, what we've seen from the Lions this year. So disappointing for me. And like we talked about with the other teams last week, when you look at the Rebels, for example, expected to make the finals. They didn't. It's an F. That's a fail. It cut dry and short. That's it.
And so the so you go for an F, that thing, yeah, particularly harsh. Stephen, you've been a little bit nicer.
I'm not going to be as harsh as my namesake there. I will. I've decided to go for. I'll tell you what. They were one bonus point, guys. Let's think about that. If they picked up a bonus point, they would have nabbed it. You know, given that they weren't at their best, they were almost on the threshold. But Steve is right. Not quite good enough, but I've given them a D for Dunstan.
Yeah, and I've agreed with you on that, as have as has Michael, who's managed to come back to reality after his storm has crashed. Arshwin's been a little bit nicer, and he's given them a C for this one,
Such a nice guy.
Such a nice guy. Looking at some of the players they're losing, so currently they're losing the locks in Kruger and Lewis. Quagga Smith also heading off, and Nick Groom, the scrum half, as well. So not the kind of exodus that we're seeing from some of the other teams, such as the Bulls, for example, who are losing five locks or every single lock that they've had this season. So you've got to say next season we should be still rebuilding, but at least they should still have pretty much the same quality to challenge next year.
The problem is that they've got to go back to where it all started, don't they? The big talk when this Lions team actually did reach their pinnacle of being so good is that progress they made right through from before Curry Cup. They built their team up in through the Curry Cup. They brought all those guys all through all those divisions. And it seems like they got them there and they've gone, sweet, we did it. We got them there. We've got this cool group. We've got everything sorted. And then we've had a couple of great years and now everyone's gone. And there was no real thought process of to what happens they go. And so they're kind of back at the point where they were before started all, where they're kind of just floundering. And as it goes, I mean, Quagg Smith's going to be a massive loss. That guy is a machine. He is absolutely amazing. Anyone would want to pick him up. But where's the next flow coming through? And where's the next group? Where's that next influx of quality Lions players coming through? They don't seem to be there just yet. And we'll see what happens. They are Curry Cup's not far away from kicking off and how they progress past there. So, yeah, I mean, they've definitely got the players to build on. Where's that building coming from? Are they going to go back to just what they used to do? Or is there another influx of that youth coming through or not? That's the big question for me.
Yep, it is. And I'll let you keep going. And you can now give us a little summary of how the Highlanders season has gone. As a man down there in the deep south, nice and cold.
It's not that cold. Now the mighty Highlanders, well. Well, you can sum up the Highlanders most seasons by kicking things off by saying they're not expected to do that well. All their season is based on a couple of guys staying injury-free, etc., etc., yada, yada. It's always the same old story with the Highlanders. And they didn't do that, really, did they? Ben Smith was injured for a good portion of their season. And the playoffs, let's be fair, that's what it's all about, especially for the Highlanders. They made it to that golden mark of getting into that next round. Yes, it was by the skin of their teeth and they didn't have much left to offer it, but I think the Highlanders team is, just has this ability to produce players, and it just produces guys that step up. We've seen it with the All Black team name today. We've got another layer to that amazing team down there doing the good job. But yeah, it's a team that performs very, very well. They were missing key guys throughout the season. Naholo, of course, wasn't really the Naholo we've seen in previous years from him as well. And yet we did things with a shoestring budget, if you'd probably call it that, with what we had. A lot of guys performing above their expectation and getting the results we need them to get. So really, I can only give them a positive. They smashed the Waratahs down here, which was just the greatest thing in the world because the Waratahs are the arch enemy. And they probably had a few points where things didn't go too well for them. Obviously, the draw, or the called off game with the Crusaders, could have been interesting to see how they're tracking at that time, because that was an interesting part of their season. But I think overall it's been a pretty positive sort of year for them. And as we always say after Highlanders, there's always, you know, that next layer. They've always got players coming through and they're always building and developing and always punching above, far above their weight. So without going into too much nitty-gritty detail about their results and everything like that, I'd give them a pretty good rating and another season of building through depth, which they just seem to continuously keep doing year after year after being discounted all the time. And, I mean, no Ben Smith, no problem. We've got old Josh McKay down there, so it's all right. No worries. No need to rebuild. We'll be fine next season. Don't worry, Paul. It's all good.
Dear. We'll get on to how they're tracking in the future in a second, but just quickly on their ranks, 13th for number of carries, 10th for metres made, but 6th for clean breaks. So they really know how to use the ball when they've got it. And 8th for defenders beaten. On the defensive side of things, 12th for number of tackles, 13th for missed tackles, and 13th for tackling success rate. So 82%, not great on that side of things. But number one for discipline. So they didn't give up many penalties. Stephen, your thoughts? Are you as positive as Steve is around that one? That, hey, they made the playoffs, therefore everything's not too bad?
Well, sort of like the Lions, just missing out by a point. They actually scraped in by one point, and I don't think we should actually forget that at the end of the day, guys. I'm just trying to sort of work out, or think in my own mind, what was their best performance of the year. You know, I thought their round one performance when they played the Chiefs at Waikato, a man down. Did they have a man sent off? Was Tomkinson, I think, was either sent off? Or
they got the first red card of the season, didn't they?
Yeah, first red card of the season. And, boy, they showed some ticket to win that game. And I thought, oh, man, they've still got that steel about them. But then from there on out, it's almost like they it's almost like they sort of stumbled upon their way. They went down to Dunedin, and we were expecting a really good performance against the Reds, but they got a bit of a fright that night. You know, the Reds actually played a really, really good game and probably rather fortunate to come away. And then they headed across to Melbourne and lost to the Rebels. And you could see there was a few little sort of speed wobbles, and then a return match against the Hurricanes they lost. And then they probably lost a little bit of momentum with the cancelled game, that, you know, if we can all remember that. And then they came to Eden Park, a little bit unlucky to probably lose to the Blues 33-26 in that game. And then they played the Hurricanes that way. So they were just losing games by short margins. It was only probably their poorest performance of the season, probably against the Crusaders, where they were well and truly beaten. And yet that was a game also, they were in that game for the first, well, probably up until the first half. But, you know, the team like the Crusaders are more than capable of twisting the knife. So I'm probably thinking maybe one of their better performances. In fact, one game I really enjoyed the most, and ironically, they had two draws in this particular. Was it two draws, Steve? I think they had during the season.
Two draws and, of course, a cancelled game.
Technically three draws, I suppose. Yeah. But the game that I enjoyed probably the most, and it's because we did a showdown at Sports Zone Bar and at Sky City, Paul and I, was the 31-all draw with the Chiefs. I thought that was an absolutely fantastic game where I think at the end of the day, no team knew how to win. But I also think in terms of performances, I actually thought their performance against the Blues at home was a really good performance when they shut out the Blues in the second half after looking probably a little bit wobbly for the first 30 minutes or so, Steve. So, yeah, a lot of good rugby. And I think a good performance also against the Sunwolves. I know we're only talking the Sunwolves, but to put 52 points on the Sunwolves and basically, I don't know, keep them to either nil or five, to nil, I thought was a really good performance as well. So, yeah, I don't know what it was. They just didn't quite have the clinicalness that they have had in the past when opportunities were up. They just missed out. But I'll tell you what, one thing that they have got, they got the third best first five in New Zealand running around for them. he is so promising.
Was that perhaps their issue this year is that they've lost Sopawanga, they haven't had that experienced head at 10, they've been mixing it up, they haven't given one guy the reins and said, you're the man for the season. We've had Josh Iwani, we've had Marnie Banks, we've had Bryn Gatland all have a go. I think Josh needed to be given the reins, you know, and said, you're the man, off you go, have it for the season. And that's with hindsight, that's easy to say. But it's harder when you're kind of trying to find 15 fit players to put on the pitch.
Two areas I want to quickly focus on with the Highlanders is probably their back three. I know I don't know if we saw vintage Ben Smith this year, and look, he took a couple of head knocks and he had some injuries, but I was a little bit disappointed with their two men on the flanks. I don't think Waisaki and Tevita Lee were both a little up and down. I know Steve may or may not agree with me. And just quickly, the other areas before I give Steve an opportunity to have a say, I just wondered if they never really, the coaches never really gave an extra loose forward trio an opportunity to settle in and to find their best loose forward trio. I think they might have just sort of overplayed the rotation thing.
They've got a lot of them, don't they? They've got six quality back rows. Squire was, you could tell they were keen to get him back. And straight away, as soon as he was available, he was straight back in that team. But they've got quality and they've got depth there. And you can say any of those six could start and give you a pretty competitive Super Rugby back row combination as well. So, yeah, I'd agree with you on there. I don't agree with you, Paul, however, on the Josh Iwani situation, because how many games did the likes of Bryn Gatland or Marty Banks even start? Bryn Gatland, I know, started one. It was absolutely terrible, and they pretty much shipped him straight back to Auckland straight after him. It was that bad. Marty Banks really just filled in his little void, didn't he? He did a Marty Banks role. That's what Marty Banks does. I think they didn't try to overwork Iwani. I think they gave him a few games at fullback just to try and let him catch his bearings, because, you know, he can see a game a lot better and just try and analyse things a bit more. I don't mind that too much because he's capable there as well. But I don't think they really said, not like the Blues. I mean, if you're comparing with, you know, apples and oranges here, they definitely chopped them out like they're a pair of socks. But they were pretty consistent with Iwani, and they'll try something else. It wouldn't really work, and they'll go back to what they knew. He definitely had the lion's share, I think, and I think definitely had the confidence of what they're doing. But I think they didn't probably have the intention that they were actually going to have a very successful season. It's like they kind of went into this trying to obviously do as best they can. Obviously, every team does. But their intentions were to find that number 10. And I think they probably did that a bit easier than they thought. I think Iwani did kind of swim faster than he sunk in that situation. So they probably did that a bit easier than they were expecting. And the combinations there with Aaron Smith, it all gelled pretty well. It just seemed like, okay, we lost that to the Hurricanes by 3 or 4 points. Whether that's all right, because we weren't expecting that game to win. They were targeting certain things. I think certainly that Blues and Sunwolves sort of combination of games was definitely their big turning point of the season, where they did kind of push on. Now that Blues game, I was actually at that one. There was a cracking game too, and it looked ominous at the start because the Blues started off very well. And they were in that game, and I was sitting next to a Blues fan at that one, and they were getting all into it. By the 60 minute, they were pretty much crying into their scarf. So it was quite great as a Highlanders fan to that one. But yeah, they really did shut them out, really did show them control, I guess, of a match, which was great. And yeah, I think they could definitely look at that and next season take that sort of learnings with them and go for it.
Great. What's the letter?
I think, off the top of my mind, was a B.
Wow, nice, I should agree with you on the B. I think that's being a bit nice. I think they also might have had a bit of a unbalanced squad with too many centres, not enough outside backs, that as soon as Tavita Lee got injured or Naholo, they had to put Fadders or Tomkinson on the wing. So I think they're a bit of recruitment issues. I gave them a C, as did Michael, as did Stephen as well. We're running out of time, which is why I'm running over a little bit. But looking forward to next season, I'm just going to quickly run through the players they're losing. Lomax, Hemopo, Whitelock, Squire, Banks, Buckman, Fadders, Lee, Naholo, Smith. That's 10 quality players, three of whom maybe wouldn't make be in your first choice 15, but I think at least seven of them would. And I think that's going to be they're going to need to... Recruitment's going to be a big thing for them going into next season. Stephen?
I'll tell you before I give you guys a bit of a scoop. Player going to the Highlanders next year, and it's a goodie. There's three names that consistently always came up as when I were often watching the Highlanders, I think of players of the day, and there were three names that always impressed me all the time. One was Jackson Hemipore, second was Liam Kopman, third was usually Josh Ioane. Tyrell Lomax always wasn't too far away. We always know Ben Smith plays a Ben Smith game. Aaron Smith, to me, it was a little bit of a disappointing season from Aaron Smith this year. Listen, they're losing a lot of players, but I still think I think they'll recruit well. I think, with the likes of sort of Tony Brown coming on board, I think there'll be a few players who'll want to play on them. And one player who I'm hearing might be heading down that way is Geordie Barrett.
Whoa!
That's what my mail is telling me.
Geordie Barrett? Really?
Geordie Barrett.
Wow. Josh McKay, I feel sorry for you, mate.
You heard it first on the TDM.
There's been lots of rumours on Mitchell Hunt going down there as well, which is interesting. And looking at transfers, it looks like that Josh Ioane isn't re-signed yet. So he's going to be a key signing for them, you'd think, for next season. They've got Gatland, exactly, yes. As I say, Josh Ioane will be a key signing for them next season.
And Marty Banks, who was the man of the match for the Hurricanes in round six when the Hurricanes beat the Highlanders. So Marty Banks.
I think Marty Banks is going to NTT Docomo Red Hurricanes.
That's a winding sleeve up.
It's a sad statement. Bryn Gatland's the only contracted number 10, isn't it, in the side as we stand at the moment. So that's not very good. I'll tell you what, a disappointment for me and that he's away to Japan is Tavita Lee. Such a great player, under 20s. He stormed on the scene. He was an amazing talent. He just never realised that potential, and it's a real disappointment because he could have been a great player. He just never was quite at the level that he promised. So sadly, it's sad to see him go because I always had high hopes that he was going to come good, but not to be. Or Tavita.
Not to be. So, Stephen, do you want to take us through the Crusaders? Oh, sorry, the Chiefs. Not the Crusaders. Jeez.
Take us through the Chiefs. Oh, boy. The Chiefs. I'll tell you what. The season didn't start too good. And I just kind of wonder if there was a... How many more teams, too, by the way, have we got to cover off?
Two.
Two more teams. Okay, I'll try and get through this relatively quickly, shall we say. Their first two games, they were in a bit of trouble after their first two or three games. And I think they're probably that low point was losing to the Sunwolves. And then they got absolutely tailed up by the Crusaders before they actually managed to draw against the Hurricanes, which seemed to get themselves back on season. And what sort of got them right back on track was that amazing away win against the Bulls in Pretoria when they beat them 56 points to 20. And things looked like they were happening. But, along the way, all of a sudden they started having injuries as well. I think it was on that tour that they lost Retallick as well, either in that Bulls game or Hagawares game, fellas. So the wheels just seemed to fall off when they just lost sort of key guys. There were times there they were actually using, if I recall, I think they had two locks in their middle row at one stage, if I recall. And that's when, to be fair, guys like Jesse Paretti, who I'm not really a fan of, actually stood up. But, one guy I think who seemed, there are a couple of guys that seemed to hold that side together, Tyler Argeron and guys like Brad Webb, Anton Lennox, Leonard Brown, you could probably always they were always guaranteed to be really, really strong. Probably their poorest performance, ironically, I think, was probably that performance against the Crusaders the first time when they lost, where they couldn't take a trick, and then ironically they completely turned it around in Suva and basically came up with an amazing result against the Crusaders, beating them. God, what was the score? 40-27, and probably one of the
coming back from 20 points down was the big thing. Yeah.
Super Rugby season. Listen, I think they end the season, given the injuries that they had, given the way that they started, I think they end up with a pretty creditable season.
Yep, and just to quickly run through their where they rank. So third for number of tackles. I normally start with the attacking side. Let's start with the attacking side of things. Sixth for number of carries, fifth for metres made, so making more metres per. Second for clean breaks. Antoinette Brown was a big part of that. Six for defenders beaten. Defenders beaten was a big thing. Offloads was actually Antoinette Brown's thing, wasn't it? Manu was the guy actually making the breaks. Third for tackles. 12th for missed tackles, not so good there. Sixth overall, 85% tackling rating. So not too bad. Second on for the penalties conceded. So one of the most disciplined side, which is not the reputation that the Chiefs have. Let's be honest, the Chiefs have a reputation for giving away penalties there. Yeah, Colin Cooper going from people saying, hey, he should be fired, to being arguably coach of the season. I mean, what a turnaround. Very.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their fixtures, don't you? And you see loss, draw, which was like, oh, how'd that happen against the Hurricanes? It always come out of nowhere. And that kind of pivoted their season. But yeah, you're writing them off. And I tell you, one man, he's all in the news, isn't he? Brad Webber, for all the good reasons. But as a captain, I love watching his post-match interviews, because the guy wears his heart on his sleeve. And you don't need to watch the game. You just need to watch his post-match interview, and you know exactly what happened. Because if they won, oh, the smile's beaming, and he is in there, and he's loving the boys, and that they lose, no whole buzz. He's going in, and he's saying that it wasn't good enough, we didn't do this. And I love seeing him as captain. Just the way that he portrayed the game at the end, it was great to see. So it was a bit of a shame when he lost that later on in the season, when actually getting back on that winning horse. But yeah, season of contrasting fortunes, wasn't it? And how they turned that around was phenomenal. And so many guys in there you can pinpoint. But you've already mentioned those key guys as well, Leonard Browns and Brad Webber. Most notably, I think he was the guy that was the catalyst for this team coming back from nowhere. He's just been fantastic this year and has a big, big star next to his name for Super Rugby in 2019. What else do you say about the Chiefs? Great turnaround, great comeback, and that Crusaders game in Fiji, certainly, I think that encapsulated this season in a game. So poor to start with. Got a bit of life back and then finished really, really strongly. And I think to make the playoffs after what they had was a phenomenal effort.
Yep, I've given them a C, as has Michael. Stephen, you've gone the same way. But Steve, you've a B, same as Ashwin. I mean, we know Ashwin ranks highly, gives people nice grades, but a B, Stephen. Steve, that's a very positive note for them.
Yeah, well, their season was over, wasn't it? At one point, it was very easy for them to go, hey, okay, we're done. No, I mean, put the fork in, we are absolutely done. But you've got to give them credit, the way they kept going, and they kept it up. And, I mean, it takes one result or one performance for them to say, we can actually do this, we can actually step it up, we can actually be good enough to get his performances. And then that Crusaders game, that was the turning point, that was the key match and the pinnacle of their season, and that gave them the belief beyond anyone's other results to turn it around. So from what they started with and just the ability to get back up and go again, fantastic. And of all the injuries they had as well, like, I mean, they've got their own hospital there just about full of Chiefs players. It's that bad. To bring all those guys through and still perform, everyone's like, McKenzie's out, see you Chiefs. No, they stepped up and good on them. They got the best out of, I think, what they had. And even guys like Debrasini near the end of the season, I think, played way better than we ever seen him in the Rebels shirt. So they definitely had a lot more out of their players than you'd expect.
Looking forward to next season, losing Retallick for a season, Stephen Donald's out, Malakileo,
oh, no.
is gone, and Colin Cooper leaving. But perhaps the biggest one of all, Warren Gatland is coming in. So things are, they're looking like a dangerous team for next season, aren't they, Stephen?
Yeah, no, they definitely, with the likes of Gatland coming on board, I'm hoping that he will probably maybe attract a couple of players or so. Although, if you sort of look around in terms of quality locks, you see a few guys transferring at the moment. So that'll be the big task. Brodie Retallick will definitely be a hard one to replace. I really wanted to give them a B, you know, based on, I thought even the performance against the Hagawa in the quarterfinal game.
Yep.
Yeah, I you know, they did have the winning of that game, and ironically enough, that seemed to change when Debrasini left the field, but just sort of still fresh in my mind was also not just the Crusaders loss, but losing heavily to the Sunwolves at home.
Yep.
That was a tough one. Yeah, listen, I probably could have given them a B. In fact, I probably should have given them a B, but unfortunately, it's down on the record. I've already given them the C. But
it's when you look at their squad and go, it was injuries, you're right. Ryan Coxon had to come in for a short term. Mafaleo came in short term. Reuben O'Neill didn't play. Kane Haynes didn't play. And that's just messing around with their props. Never mind other positions where we had players who did not play and had to come in for short-term replacements. Pretty much every position seemed to have short-term replacements in there somewhere to try and cover, patch up this squad. But doing it two seasons on the trot, you've got to ask yourself, is that actually a strength and conditioning issue?
Paul, I was just to interrupt. Do they re-sign Jack Debrasini, because he only signed for one season? Do they re-sign somebody like him again, that they've got a couple of young first fives in the likes of Tian Falcon? They've also got the very promising Caleb Trask from the Steamers, who would have probably gone to the under-20 tournament had he not been injured. I can't see them holding on to Marty McKenzie. He's a little bit all over the place. So my question is, do you re-sign somebody like Jack Debrasini?
Ouch. I shot to the heart.
Yeah, Marty McKenzie, goodbye. Off back to Southland, my friend.
Come back to the Stags, Marty.
Go home. I think you do, because I think you're looking at Damien McKenzie moving back to 15. And so Ty Falcon and Debrasini is starting and bench players, and then the guy from the Steamers is your is his first season at Super Rugby, so you don't want to throw him in. I'd be too reliant on him. So I would say yes, on the grounds I put Damien McKenzie to 15, not at 10.
Hey, I wonder what impact Gatlin's going to have. You talk about getting players in, but getting guys from the north coming down to play in Southern Hemisphere rugby. I mean, if anyone's going to have that pull, it's him, isn't it? So, I mean, yes, you might see a Retallick go, but who are you going to see come in a key spot like that? Someone, you know, from England, who knows, Scotland, Ireland.
It's the perfect time if you want to come and have one, maybe two seasons of Super Rugby before going back up north to try and qualify for the next Rugby World Cup. This is when you want to do it. If you're going to say, okay, I want to have the experience of coming and playing Super Rugby, I know it's going to hurt me wages, but if I want the experience, that would be the time to do it. And yeah, we may get a surprise signing. So Steve, do you want to take us through the last team, the Sharks?
Oh, dear, the Sharks. Oh, do we really want to talk about the goodness of the Sharks? Now, the Sharks season, you can encapsulate a little like the South African teams. All of them are a bit like that, aren't they? Horribly inconsistent form, and that's really what you can put them all down to. Overall, just mid-table in South Africa, which I guess you give that a good pass maybe for them, I guess, overall. 7 wins, a draw, and 8 losses. But that was a heavily congested South African table. Their performances, I think, left a lot to be desired. Not getting the best throughout this season. So the Sharks, for me, not greatest. I think coaching is a big question mark that you'll probably talk about with this team. Coaching, dad, and inconsistency. That'll sum up my Sharks season in 3 words.
Yeah, Robert Dupreeer picking Robert Dupreeer at 10 was just a real bad. It looks bad. The optics were bad, and the fact that the results didn't come, it was also bad. Quickly, the rankings, fifth for number of carries, but eighth for metres made with those carries. 13th for clean breaks, 11th for defenders beaten. Yeah, they ran into a lot of brick walls. They were there was not much finesse about this team that was really sparkling with talent. Defensively, 9th for number of tackles made, 3rd for missed tackles, didn't miss many, 2nd for tackling success rate, 86%. So pretty impressive there. The just quick check on the discipline side of things. They ranked 7th for that, so not too, yeah, mid table there. I mean that's that big thing about the Sharks, isn't it? Is the talent they have, how they should play on paper, and then what they put on the pitch on the grass was just sporadic at best and absolutely downright awful most of the time. So yeah, that's. It's a question of unfulfilled potential, isn't it, Stephen?
You know, I know one of our guests, our regular guests, former rugby correspondent in South Africa, John O'Connor, often told me, listen, they're probably the best team in South Africa, but probably the poorest coached team that's over there.
Oh, he went bigger than that. The most talented team in Super Rugby, he reckons. But the worst coached team in Super Rugby.
Well, what sums up one of the real oddities of this team is an away performance where they beat the Lions 42-5, and you should be cock a hoop, and you go home and get torn a new one by the Jaguares, 51 points to 17. Crazy, probably their worst performance of the season. And ironically, their best performance of the season, a 21-all draw against the Crusaders, where you could arguably say they've been unlucky, fellas.
A 21-point draw where they didn't score a try, and the Crusaders didn't kick a penalty. The only draw where a team's got a try bonus point for having three tries more than the opposition. That probably sums up the regular season of Super Rugby. That one game. Looking at those stats, the Crusaders. Everyone says you have to score tries to beat the Crusaders. Well, apparently not. You can just kick penalties, all of this kind of stuff. A crazy one. Players that they're losing, and they're losing Robert Dupria, Esther Hazen, Courtney Wiener, both Vandermeer, Osterhazen. So you're kind of normal exodus. But the off the field issues were as much of an issue for them as the on-field issues. Kind of rumours that they weren't happy about how Robert Dupria left and was announced by the Shell Sharks and how Sale were sort of poaching their players. It just all seemed bad. The fact that they managed to scramble their way into the into the finals was actually a surprise. I've actually gone for a C on these guys, and I'm feeling generous there because Stephen, you've both decided it's a D for them.
Well, you've already talked about it a bit, haven't you? The talent the side has is phenomenal, and on paper they should be absolutely creaming it. And a backline of excitement, of power. I mean, you name what a normal person would start that back line. Louis Schroeder, obviously, is an experienced scrum half. He's been around. But Cameron Wright is a real up-and-comer guy in that jersey as well. I think Kerwin Bosch, who never started at 10, probably should be starting at 10. You've got Lekanyu Arm, Marcus Olamapimpi, Luazi and Volvo, Sabrusa and Kosi, Afasi, Afilili Fasi. Guys, I mean, so much talent and guys that could just destroy a game without even special little flashy moves. They just give them the ball. And you know what? Mpimpi and Nkosi and Arm and Fussy, all these guys can tear it to shreds. So overall, a massive, massive disappointment for me. This team, I thought this team would top the conference, and I think they should have based on the team they had. They've not got really, never really been in it, have they? And the Jaguars deservedly so, because South African teams just couldn't piece together a combination of form. They couldn't string results together. But I think we could all agree, though, that South Africa has really stepped up the game when it comes to touring, especially against New Zealand teams. they kind of put that as a massive target on their season, and they've really shown it up this year as well, putting in good knocks when they come over here.
Yep, Ashwin agreed with you guys on a D. Michael, again, is something in the sippy cup there with his B for them. So we're going to have to ask him, what is it that he likes about South African teams, beginning with the letter S? Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this. Next week, we'll be talking about the Crusaders, Hagararis, Brumbies, Hurricanes and Bulls. This week, tomorrow night, obviously, join us, the All Blacks edition, where we'll go through the squad. And on Thursday, I'll have Herman back to preview the Super Rugby final. And I think we better finish now before Stephen dies on us with all his coughing. So thank you very much, Stephen. Don't have to say a word. Thank you, Steve. Go check out Cornflake's Crib and Cornflake on YouTube and Twitter. Don't forget to subscribe, all of that kind of wonderful stuff. Thank you very much for joining us. And catch you all tomorrow night for the All Blacks edition.